Good afternoon. Tuesday, February 6th. This is the Joint Committee on Ways and Means Education Subcommittee. Today we're having an informational meeting, Department of Higher Education capital construction proposals. And prior to going into that, I'm going to turn it over to Steve Bender, legislative fiscal analyst, who's going to talk a little bit about the schedule that the Ways and Means Ed Subcommittee members have in front of them. It's the nice schedule with the colors, the pretty colors. So, Steve.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I just did want to let you know that we've distributed a calendar with a tentative schedule for you for the rest of this week and the following 2 weeks. You will see that there are a number of budgets coming up. And just to give you some idea of it, during this period of time, this should enable you to complete your work on the non-education bills that have been assigned to you, with one small exception. And then following that, we'll be able to focus more directly on the education budgets. But if you have any questions about this schedule, please let me know. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. Representative Edwards.
Mr. Chair, do we have some consensus on the time for the informational meeting scheduled for the 21st?
Representative, this will shock you, but I've not heard responses from all 10 members of this committee. So, no, we do not have consensus yet. However, having said that, I'm anticipating that we will be going to Portland State on Wednesday, February 21st, and that will probably be starting closer to 4 o'clock, if not 4:30. And I've also instructed my chief of staff to send out another email that will give a little bit more detail in terms of the agenda for the hearing. But at this point right now, you know, that my goal is that perhaps by tomorrow we will have an exact time. So,
and Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Jensen.
Is it necessary to respond if the member is willing to accept whatever you decide?
I appreciate that. If you would respond, just so I'm not bothering my chief of staff and saying, well, what about Representative Jensen? So I appreciate that. So, all right, we have a lot to talk about, so we're going to go forward. And I'm sure as we progress, more of the committee members will be here. So I'm first going to call up Bob Simonton, the Director of Capital Construction Planning and Budget for the Oregon University System. He's going to lead us off. So, Mr. Simonton, welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair William Dell and members of the committee. My name is Bob Simonton. I'm Director of Capital Construction for the Oregon University System. And it's my pleasure to come before you today to present the Governor's recommendations for our capital budget. In developing the $594 million capital construction request, we've established a process to review and evaluate each project to determine how best to utilize limited resources and still allow for continued success within our academic and our auxiliary programs. Although projects are presented that support each of our board's goals, the need of capital repair continues to be an area of great concern and has contributed to the magnitude of our request. Today I'm going to start with an introduction of our current assets to provide some context for our capital budget request. We'll also explore the capital request and show how we arrived at the governor's recommended budget, and then we will hear from our campus presidents who will talk about our highest ranked projects. Now, the state has made a sizable investment in higher education facilities. We currently have over 21 million gross square feet of building space. We are the stewards of over one half of all of state-owned facilities in Oregon, with a current replacement value of over $3 billion. Within our seven universities, there are over 1,100 buildings and the associated infrastructure like roads, sidewalks, central plants, and underground utility systems. If we can put all of our students, our faculty, staff, and facilities together on one campus, we would be the fourth largest city in Oregon. Now, to keep our campuses operational and serve a growing and changing population of students, and capital investments are authorized every 2 years upon the approval of the OUS board, the governor, and the legislature. Now, since 1995, the investments into our facilities have looked like this. The state has contributed an average of 19% within those six biennial capital budgets. Now, the state's investment, however, has allowed the campuses to leverage those funds by attracting $800 million of donations and $940 million campus-funded projects. Now, a majority of the state funds have been in the form of Article 11G bonds. And these bonds have a one-for-one match requirement of either general fund or gifts. And this type of fund works well for new projects that can generate the donations from alumni and partnerships with Oregon businesses. Now, gifts and grants have kept the debt service paid by the state to less than 4% of our education and general operating budget. Now, where the one-for-one match requirement does not work well is the funding of our existing buildings. Competing priorities for general fund dollars and limited opportunities for donations have severely limited our capital repair efforts. And unfortunately, the level of state funding has not been able to keep up with the amount of capital repairs needed. And in the next few slides, I'm going to talk about the overall condition of our buildings and show how we ended up with so many worn out, energy inefficient, and seismically challenged buildings. Now, this graph shows the construction history since 1880. Now, if I could only use one slide to explain the magnitude of our capital needs, slide 6 would be the one. Now, unlike the rest of state government, higher education facilities were constructed mainly within a small 15-year window from 1960 to 1975. And as depicted in the red bar shown on the graph, those buildings were added and in response to the baby boomers entering college. Now, though our buildings are designed to last 100 years or more, the building subsystems, like the electrical, the plumbing, and roofs, only last 30 to 40 years. So now in 2007, most of our buildings in our system have aged to a point where they're past due for renewal. And as the graph also indicates, we did not have the benefit of a state building code until 1974, nor a seismic code until 1993 that recognized the magnitude of a Cascadia subduction zone earthquake that looms off of our coast. So therefore, when renewal projects are funded, we must also anticipate the cost for code and safety compliance and seismic mitigation work. An independent study has determined that based on our building history, our capital repair funding should be approximately $40 million per year. And however, our state funding has been less than $12 million per year since 1993, and our backlog of projects is now grown to $640 million. The backlog continues to grow at a rate of $28 million per year, and the graph on slide 7 shows the subsystems that make up this current backlog. So overall, OUS's education and facilities are ranked well into the poor category by national benchmarks. Another area of concern is seismic. I mentioned earlier that most of our buildings were constructed before the 1993 statewide building code revision. And so we felt it was important to identify our seismic risks and come up with a plan of corrective actions. So we began partnering with the state's Department of Geological and Mineral Industries, or DOGAMI, in 2002 to gather information on earthquake integrity of our buildings. And we've conducted surveys on our larger buildings using a Federal Emergency Management Administration method. And as a result, we've identified $400 million of seismic mitigation work that is needed on our campuses, in addition to the $640 million deferred maintenance projects. So I've noted just a few challenges that we face, and these issues will take many years to resolve. But the projects proposed in the governor's recommended budget can demonstrate how we'll begin to meet those challenges. Now, there are 46 projects seeking your approval, and to help sort through all those projects, we came up with a system to prioritize the education and general projects. The projects were ranked based on scores achieved in 7 criteria. I'm not going to try to go into each element, but I'll summarize by saying there are 4 basic issues that we're trying to address. The first is reinvestment. And this is simply trying to fix the buildings we already have. The second is excellence, and these projects create or modify existing buildings to improve the performance of a program. Third is access, which is related to projects that add space for enrollment growth or to provide continued access to our existing buildings. And the fourth program objective is targeted investment for economic growth. And these projects deal with strategic investments to support the Oregon economy through tech transfer and the commercialization of our campus research. So that's the long-term benefit. However, we estimate that over 5,300 jobs will be created through the throughout the state in the short term in order to support all of the construction activity at each of the campuses. Unfortunately, Mr. Bender did not get a chance to present his introduction to higher education funding seminar at yesterday's hearing. So you see through on the graph on slide 12, OUS has a few more funding types than the community colleges. So to simplify matters, I've placed all of our funding types into two categories, state funds or campus funds. Now, the state funds can only support projects related to our educational mission. We call them education and general projects, and they include classrooms and libraries and central plants. The campus funds, however, can support all types of projects, like the auxiliaries, which include housing and dining, athletics, and parking. But most of the campus funds are in the form of donations, which support the education and general projects. And I probably won't have time to discuss each of the 46 projects today, but I will summarize the projects based on the capital program objectives. Start with the education and general projects here on slide 13. As you can see, most of the budget is directed to reinvestment, 60%. And this budget request will do two very important things. One, it will stop the growth of our deferred maintenance by fully funding the capital repair needs. And two, it will continue to fund the most urgent deferred maintenance and seismic remediation projects and actually begin to reduce that $640 million backlog by $89 million. So even at that level of funding, it will take at least 20 years to rebuild our campuses. In a few moments, we'll hear from our campus presidents who will present the top five projects in our budget request and what impact these projects will have on their campuses and to the Oregon economy. Presidents Bernstein and Burmeier will present the two science building renovations and additions related to reinvestment. And then we'll hear from President Minahan, who will talk about the top priority project within the excellence priority, how they will improve academic programs within their facilities, recently vacated by the Department of Public Safety, who have moved to their own new campus in Salem. And then we'll hear from President Dow, who will speak to the top projects related to access to accommodate growing enrollment in the health professions at OIT. And President Dow will also address the geothermal power generation project at OIT, which is one of the demonstration projects outlined in the Governor's Renewable Energy Action Plan, and it's to promote the creation of a diverse renewable energy generation resources in Oregon. Finally, before we head to the presidents here, I just wanted to have a final summary. This is the auxiliary projects and the student fee-funded projects that are supported by the campus funds. Again, our projects are focused mainly on reinvestment and access for growth. So all the projects shown on this list are supported by the revenues generated by their sponsoring campus auxiliary. So that was sort of a brief, big-picture, high-level view of the capital budget. And before I introduce any of the campus representatives, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Questions? Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Are the projects listed here, as noted in the presentation, in priority order?
Mr. Chair, Representative Edwards, we have a priority list which I can submit to you, but the projects will be presented by the presidents are the top five projects that were reviewed by the OUS board
So that's the top five projects for each campus independently?
No, it's the top five projects for the system.
For the system.
Okay. Yes.
I would like to see the full list, too.
Okay.
Thank you.
Senator Decker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So you have a list. The list that you're going to give us is a prioritized list from that the board did of this is our highest priority to our lowest priority in the Capitol.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Senator Decker. Jump back a few slides. I had a list of... we ranked each project by these factors. So each project received a numerical score, and that was what was presented to the OES Board of Higher Education back in July.
Other questions from members of the committee? Thank you, Mr. Simonton.
Okay.
All right. I understand you're going to be remaining there.
And now introduce President Dan Bernstein to talk about PSU's project related to reinvestment.
Okay. And I'd like to, on behalf of the committee, welcome President Bernstein.
Thank you.
All yours.
Thank you. Chair Galizia, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Dan Bernstein. I'm the president of Portland State University, and I appear here today to support the proposal of the governor and the State Board of Higher Education to address the capital needs of our system. I want to talk today about two projects at Portland State, Lincoln Hall renovation and renovation to Science Building 2. I've submitted some formal testimony, including some horror stories, if you will, from staff members at PSU about our facilities. And rather than read that testimony, I just want to talk briefly about the two projects. The first is Lincoln Hall. Lincoln Hall is PSU's oldest and most historic building, which would benefit from $29 million in support for deferred maintenance. I hope that when the committee comes to campus on the 21st of February, that you'll have the opportunity to visit Lincoln Hall as well as the Science Building. But just in case you don't, I brought along some pipes from those facilities. As you can see, you can't see through them. These pipes are pretty symbolic of what's operating in the building and kind of shows the level of maintenance that that needs to be addressed. Lincoln Hall was built in 1911, and it served as district school number one for decades as Lincoln High School, and it was actually deeded over to Portland State because the public school system thought the building was beyond repair. That was in 1952, and little has been done to it since that time. And thousands of students, of course, from Portland State have passed through Lincoln Hall, adding to the wear and tear. As you know, our campus with 26,000 students operates almost 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, which escalates the level of depreciation on our facilities. And so for Lincoln Hall, the $29 million in deferred maintenance is critical to stop the continuing depreciation of that building. The second building, of course, is the Science Building 2. And in Science Building 2, we're looking for not only deferred maintenance money, but also matching some 11 G-bonds to provide additional upgrades to that science building. And as I said before, I've attached to my testimony some horror stories about what's happening in terms of leaking roofs and other disasters that are destroying really valuable equipment in that facility. The total cost of the science building, that two projects, is $48.2 million, of which $26.3 million is for deferred maintenance, and the $19.5 million is for upgrades and improvements, and we are working to raise money privately to match the 11 G bonds. Again, I want to thank you for the major investments that you made last year. The renovations for Shattuck Hall are underway, and we hope that with your support this session, we can begin to address our next two top priorities, Science Building and Lincoln Hall. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, President Bernstein. And I just to let the committee members know, when we do visit Portland State, we'll be wearing protective gear if we're going to go into the Lincoln Hall. When we figure out exactly what time we're going to start the hearing, I'm going to get there early, and I'm going to encourage some of you. Portland State has been kind enough to offer us a tour of Lincoln Hall, and so we'll try to set that up, and I would encourage committee members, if they can fit it into their schedules, I think that would be useful. So,
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Walker.
I'd like to ask the President, are there any ghosts in Lincoln Hall?
I can't guarantee that there aren't, Representative Walker.
Mr. Chairman.
I'm a real ghost fan, so I'm hoping to take the tour and find a few for you.
Well, we can provide some if there aren't any. We'll also provide bottled water as well.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Senator. Senator Devlin.
Mr. Chairman, just to Senator Walker, she'll hear later, not today, but when we get into proceedings, about one of our institutions, and I believe the project is still on the list, that may have human remains.
Oh, I recall that. I recall that from our session. That's a little more ghosty. That's too real.
Other questions? Senator Morse.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I recognize this question may border on heresy, but would like to ask it anyway. What would be the cost to replace rather than restore?
Chair Delizio, Senator Morse, actually the cost of replacement is not that much, the cost of just tearing down and doing over, there's not much cost benefit at all. We have the same dilemma with respect to Shattuck Hall the last session, and it was clear that there were enough graduates of Shattuck Hall, including members of this body, who went to Shattuck Elementary School, that the cost benefit for tearing it down wasn't quite worth it. And the same is true with Lincoln Hall. There are enough people who graduated from Lincoln High School that we see the renovation of that high school building as an opportunity for some philanthropic support to help raise money for the project.
With all due respect, I'm not sure that was a direct answer.
Did you have a balance?
There's not much to be said for urban
maintenance. I'm not sure, sure whether we have the exact dollar figure, but...
Chair Galizio, Senator Morse. The current replacement value is a little over $27 million. The cost to improve the building is $29
million. Chair Galizio, Senator Morse, that was about the same differential we had with Shattuck Elementary School the last time around. And so that's partly why we chose to go with the renovation rather than the total replacement.
Thank you. Senator Walker.
And cost of replacement and cost of preservation is priceless. It truly is. We need to preserve our history, and I think there's important history in that building. And there's not much there in the difference.
Well, I qualified my question.
You did.
Mr. Chair.
Ms. Senator Starr.
You know, this conversation has prompted a question for me. You said that one of the reasons that you are interested in restoring Lincoln is because a number of folks have graduated from there and the possibility to attract donations or donors. Those donor dollars wouldn't go to the funding of the rehabilitation of Lincoln, but it would go to PSU generally because the amount you're asking for, I believe, is $29 million, which is the cost to rehabilitate. So tell me, are you going to solicit donations for the rehabilitation effort, or does that help you aid you in your request for donor dollars for other projects at the university.
Chair Galizio, Senator Starr, the $29 million is for the basic deferred maintenance of Lincoln Hall. What we hope to do with private donations would be, you know, further upgrading and enhancing the facility even more, similar to what we're asking for with the science building. The $29 million roughly goes strictly for the deferred maintenance, and then we're hoping to match the 11 G bonds for further enhancements on the building. And so that's what I mean by the opportunity for. For upgrading Lincoln Hall even further would be based on the comfort of private philanthropy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Well, let the record show that President Bernstein came today with a large rusted pipe, and we took note and appreciate you coming down here today, and we look forward to visiting you on February 21st. And so thank you very much.
Thank you very much. We look forward to welcoming you on campus.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay, now we have President John Minahan from Western Oregon University, I believe. Welcome.
Chair Galizio, Vice Chair Devlin, the committee, thank you for the opportunity to address you today. For the record, my name is John Minahan, the president of Western Oregon University. We would have brought a pipe, but actually they hold up our walls, and so we're afraid to touch the taking them off at this point. I'm here to talk about our major project, which is an opportunity for us because of the Oregon Police Academy moved to a new facility here in Salem. You might notice that the OPA is the distinction on the chart. It's in the middle of our campus. It is comprised of three buildings, two dormitories plus a center building built in 1988. The two dormitories are...
Excuse me, President, would you mind putting the mic a little bit closer?
Sure. The two dormitories, one built in 1955 and the other built in 1961, are beyond repair. And in fact, the fire department there is very interested in using them for training at some future date because they're simply well beyond code and are not really... it's not feasible to do any repair on those buildings. But what we're looking at doing is spending about $14 million on making some moves to rehouse our business department, our computer science department, and our mathematics department. Our alarms was built in 1925. You see it on the chart there at the far end. That's our math building. It houses 19 faculty members, three classrooms, a number of labs. It was, in fact, an old boarding house before we picked it up. It is also not usable in terms of its repair. The building immediately east of it, you can see it there, a small building immediately east is West House. That houses 15 people from our business department. It has no classrooms in it. Our business faculty, in fact, teach down the street about a quarter of a mile in the Oregon Military Academy, which is on our campus, because they have large classrooms there. And so we're using that borrowed space for a program of 600 majors and 300 minors. It's a very large program on the campus. The computer science department is in the old campus school, which was built in 1929, and they're a feature of this too, because what we're proposing to do is to move all three of those departments, a total of 41 faculty members, into a renovated Oregon Police Academy building. Project has been actually on the books for a long time. We looked 8 years ago and then 4 years ago with our architects in terms of what it would cost to simply totally replace the three buildings in question for math, computer science, and building, put them all together in a new building on the campus. The cost at that time was $16 million. Our architects tell us that we can remodel the existing Oregon Police Academy for around $14 million for net savings. At this point, the reason why we're able to do this is that we had a 30-year lease with the Oregon Police Academy, which was terminated early. And with that, with their movement out, we are able to really take possession of the building. We took possession last year. We're not using it at this point, but we could, in fact, begin work and get a first-rate building for very large and growing programs at our institution. We're fairly sure about the costs. In terms of square footage, it would cost $200 a square foot to simply replace the building and start anew with these three departments in it. It costs about $100 a square foot to renovate the existing space, which would also include a portion of a new space for computer science. Computer science is in the old campus school. It's fairly well wired for technology, but the classrooms are very small. And what we've done with the classrooms is take two of them, where windows are on two sides at right angles, and put a false wall up, and behind the false wall add 11 offices for faculty members that are 5x8. They also get some sunshine because the hallway is indirectly connected to their office. So that's the situation for our first project. It's an excellent opportunity to use existing space in the center of the campus at a lower cost than were we to simply start a new construction. These are all existing first-rate growing programs. They require high technology, and the buildings that they're in now will not last very long. They are, in fact, not up to code in terms of fire code, were we to try to rehabilitate them, nor are they barrier-free in terms of federal regulations, in terms of handicapped access. They're very difficult for us to use. The Arnold Arms is a particular note to me. It probably is haunted. But we actually tried to get the smaller kids to the back of the room because the floor has a gradient of about 4 inches front to back over 30 feet in each of the rooms. And so it's a very difficult situation. We have some pictures there for you to see after the first slide that situates things. The buildings are simply unsafe. We have major problems with voltage and height, and none of these buildings really have air conditioning. We are quite confident that the buildings will not last much longer. Although we've done a good job on the siding, putting them on the buildings, the foundations, the electrical circuit services is no longer adequate, and we simply cannot replace them. In short, that's the basics of our story. We have some other pictures of 1986 at the very end, where our computer science classrooms are located. They're in temporary buildings that we brought in 1986. I came to the university in 86. I won't swear to it, but I think at least one of these is from the Rajneeshi Puram people, because we did buy some and move them to the campus. So they've lasted a long time. They're still usable to some extent, these portables. But we would be able to move our computer science people into rehabilitated OPA should we be able to get this funding. Thank you for your time, and I'd be willing to answer any questions if you have them.
Are there any questions for President Mayor? Doesn't look like we have questions immediately. So thank you very much for taking the time to come here today. So next, President Martha Dow of Oregon Institute of Technology, and welcome. Thank you for.
Thank you.
Good to see you again.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Martha Ann Dow, President of Oregon Institute of Technology. I did it right this time. It's a privilege to be able to speak to you today about two capital projects at Oregon Institute of Technology, both of which fit very definitively our focus mission in the technologies, one in the engineering technology and one in the health technology area. I'll speak first to a very unique project for Oregon. It is to use geoheat to convert into steam, which in turn would become a proposed high-temperature geothermal electrical plant. Now, we all have used geothermal, and particularly at OIT, our whole campus is heated that way. But this is a project where we'd actually convert the steam to electricity. It would be the only one in Oregon. It would serve, I think, as a pilot project for many other opportunities in the state where there is geothermal and fits the mission of, I think, the energy, renewable energy opportunities that the governor has put before us. We would seek, as in terms of what the governor has proposed, lottery bonds at $2 million. There's other opportunities through SUP loans, which would be another $3 million, and so the total would be $5 million. This particular project fits well with the expertise at OIT. We have had a geoheat center, which was established in 1975. Those people in that geocenter, faculty and others, offer national and international technical assistance. Our director of that center is currently the chairman of the International Geothermal Association. In 2001, we received approval from the legislature to create the Oregon Renewable Energy Center, which in effect expands upon our geothermal expertise to include other areas in alternative energy. Recently, within the last 2 years, we've developed a renewable energy systems bachelor's degree, the only one at the bachelor's level that we know of right now in the United States. And I will admit, we modeled that after an Australian degree. We feel that it is very appropriate and timely, because as we move into alternative energy, we will need the expertise of individuals prepared in this area. This power plant would become a laboratory, not only as a demonstration grant, but as an educational tool. Specifically in the financial arena, it would offset additional energy costs for OIT at about $500,000 annually. And we feel that the project, again, would be a showcase to enhance the probability of similar activity throughout the state and throughout the nation. The next project that I want to bring before you is probably one of the nearest and dearest projects that OIT has had. We are proposing to build the second wing of the Center for Health Professions. We are requesting $9 million in G-bonds, and I'm proud to say at this moment we have raised our match. We are up to $10.8 million. This is no small thing for us. This is our first and only major capital campaign in our history. We're 60 years old in 2007. And as we have built our professionals in health and engineering and have become alums, I think we have established a well-recognized reputation in the state and outside of the state in health. This particular facility, the second wing, will be about 51,000 square feet. And you may remember that we have started the first wing through an F-bond that we received, which should be completed in fall of 2007. We will take in all of our medical imaging students in that first wing, and we will continue to expand and enhance our allied health baccalaureate degrees in the second wing, being able to provide access to more and more students in the health professions and to serve the sincerely dire need in the healthcare workforce in the state. In 2005, you recognized us as the Oregon Center for Health Professions. We did not receive any additional funding at that time, but having the recognition was very important to us as we move forward in fulfilling that mission. And as of this date, we've got over 50 years of experience in allied health, and we're the only four-year public university in this area, in our state and in our region. We are expecting to build capacity for the allied health programs, and will help fill the need for over 4,400 jobs just in the state by 2014, based on the current statistics. We have done our homework well to know what the workforce need is. We also have many collaborative opportunities with our community college colleagues and, of course, with Oregon Health Sciences University. And in the second wing, OHSU will join us, participate in the match, and have a suite for our nursing program at OIT, which is part of the Oregon Nursing Consortium. So that will be our primary partner in our facility. I would have to say that with your commitment to this $9 million G-bond, OIT will move forward in our unique mission, serving the state in the healthcare workforce, beginning to develop additional programs such as those in polysomnography, radiation therapy, and various other aspects of dire need in the healthcare workforce industry. We are also discussing a partnership with Pacific University in terms of providing physical therapy in the southern part of Oregon in this facility. So we believe in the partnerships, but we know that we need this facility to enhance our opportunities to provide and fulfill our mission in allied health. Thank you very much.
Thank you, President Dow. Are there any questions, comments? And Senator Morse.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just curious if you have the cost of a kilowatt hour for electrical power.
A total cost for the power plant?
On a unit basis, what would be the cost of providing that power compared to the commercial rate?
I don't know. Can you help me?
Chair DeLisa, Senator Morse. The geothermal power plant will, there's two processes. The first part will be to generate electricity with the geothermal heat, and then the waste heat will go to heat the campus. So it's sort of a, we have to unbundle those things to figure out what would be the cost to provide the power versus the cost to provide the heat to the campus. I'm not sure what the net arrangement is.
According to your information, it's a $500,000 net benefit. I was just curious on the power that you're going to sell, what the cost of that power actually is. But that's a small question, Mr. Chair. We can pick that up at a later date. Thank you.
And by the way, we are hoping to generate enough to have a return on the investment and sell some of the power back to the grid, Senator Morse.
Other questions? I actually want to take advantage of that. I think you'd be a particularly appropriate person to ask this question, because I've had constituents ask this, and just as we're talking about capital construction. What about distance learning and distance education? I mean, to what extent, you know, I've heard looking at building infrastructure, and so I mean, why don't you just talk a little bit about that and
sure. How
that fits in.
I'd be happy to, Mr. Chair. In reality, we have several distance programs right now that are web-based. There are lots of allied health people out in rad tech, in sonography, in other areas related in the imaging field, and they have associate degrees. And we are providing web-based the degree completion right now in echocardiography, in vascular technology, in rad science. And we do expand that particular program as we build infrastructure for the first degree. The issue for OIT and for programs such as this in the professional technology is the hands-on, and the practicum is extremely important. But we have ideas about how we can deliver in other regions of the state by forming those partnerships where we have access to labs with hospitals and with other community colleges.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate that. No further questions? So thank you very much again for coming today. And I'd now like to call up President Dave Frohnmayer from the University of Oregon, no stranger to these halls. Don't see that you have a pipe, but welcome. Nice to see you.
Thank you very much, Chairman Galizio, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Dave Frohnmayer. I'm president of the University of Oregon. And I want to thank this subcommittee for holding this hearing early in the session on matters which we think are particularly crucial to the state system of higher education and to the state. And in fact, I want to make four quick interrelated points. First of all, the particular project that I'm addressing, but really all of them, is very important for the state of Oregon. Second, that this project about which I'm to speak, the Integrated Science Complex Phase 2, is particularly related to helping to build the economy of the future for the state. The third point might well have been first, which is this critically important for the quality of higher education, the lives and experience of the students and of the faculty. And finally, it's integrally related to a spectacular act of generosity that is something that needs to be fostered even more in this state. So to those points, I would first like to acknowledge that both Senator Deckert and Senator Barnhart, Representative Barnhart, were present at the dedication of Phase 1 of this complex, and we wish to thank them for that immediate interest. Representative Morgan was present at the kickoff of the campaign, the Oregon campaign, a very ambitious private fundraising campaign for $600 million. Representative Morgan, I'd like to report that we stand at $484 million today, so that campaign has been successful. And we're doing it, obviously, not to set records for their own sake, but because this kind of philanthropy over and above public resources is critically important for the futures of each of our institutions. Senator Walker knows well and was intimately involved, as was Senator Devlin, in securing the bond funding for Phase 1, which is now well under construction, and we will be dedicating it later in its final phase. You also have before you not only two handouts, but I think on the order of five or six letters of support that come from leading firms in the state of Oregon, and indeed worldwide, emphasizing the importance of this facility for their work. Let me first, if I may, call your quick attention to the short handout on the economic impact of research and services at the University of Oregon. Our total economic impact over fiscal year is more than $1.2 billion. $20 million, or $20 of economic impact for every single dollar of state appropriation. That is real leverage. Those figures have been validated by professional economists. They're not things that are the figments of our imagination. They show the power of the leverage of state funds that have been invested in higher education at this point. And I do call your further attention and study to that short economic impact statement, because I think it illustrates dramatically some of the functions of the knowledge economy that we have moved into. Scientific research and research generally is a critically important part of what we do as an institution. I'd like to note for you that research dollars brought from out of state and spent in the state have increased by 67% at the University of Oregon in the last 5 years. Our technology transfer income sets new records each year and has for the last 11 years. It goes directly to our bottom line, and last year was more than $4.3 million. And in this, all of this activity, more than 60 startup companies have been begun at the University of Oregon as a result of activities of our researchers. So this is tangibly aiding the development of the Oregon economy. It's feeding dollars that are brought from the outside and re-spending them in this region in ways that can only be called fruitful. Much of this has been done by way of capital construction, but most of our capital construction, ladies and gentlemen, has been funded by private sources, or at least sources other than the state. Of the $211 million we spent on capital construction in the last 6 years, only $13.1 million was in the form of G-bonds, which means, in other words, for every $100 we spend on capital, something like 6% from the state, it came from the state. That does not, however, include last session's generous G-bond authorization, for which we again thank you all very much. I mentioned this research funding because although it's grown more than 50%, the space in which to conduct this research has not. Basically, we have not in the sciences been able to construct space since the dedication of our sciences complex in 1989. Until, that is to say, we broke ground on phase one, a 30,000 square foot underground signature research center associated with ONAMI. You all know ONAMI. I hope that you understand its importance, not only to higher education, but actually to this state and this region. It's leveraged more than $25 million of federal research grants alone for the state's investment just in capital construction and some modest operating funds. And beyond that, of course, has fueled a collaboration among Oregon State University, the University of Oregon, Portland State, and the Federal Research Laboratory across the Columbia River in a very fruitful collaboration that really is going to help Oregon be one of the world's leaders in the increasingly important and developing area of nanotechnology, materials characterization, green nanotechnology, and so forth. As I say, I brought you numerous letters of support from our industry partners who are saying that what these researchers and buildings have done is much more than just a gleam in the eye. These are actual technical assistance functions that allows us, in essence, to have high-tech extension to a variety of industry partners whose thriving is, in turn, important for the state of Oregon and for our future. The work that's being done here is among the highest scientific significance, really, worldwide. I think you can see briefly pictures of some magazines in which the kind of work that's been done has been front page coverage, from ranging from National Geographic to Newsweek. The baby and the Tibetan man are in each case surrounded by the neural net, which reads brain waves and other significant data about the thinking, thought, consciousness processes. That was, of course, pioneered among other places at the University of Oregon and continues to be cutting edge research that does put this state and its work on the front pages. Our proposed phase two project will be a five-story, approximately 100,000 square foot science building, state-of-the-art classrooms, laboratories, lecture meetings, meeting halls, collaborative research and instrumentation facilities. As I think you know, phase one already has included space for private entrepreneurial firms to be able to come in and work with us as direct collaborators. We'll be working in this building in the biosciences, learning and behavior sciences, neuroscience, computational sciences. Those are all polysyllabic words, and I apologize for that. But what it means is that we really are on the cutting edge of discovery, of new knowledge, of places where the federal government and the thankfully augmented appropriations for the NIH and NSF that just passed the Congress only hours ago. This is the kind of research that's being funded, and this is the kind of research for which we need adequate facilities in order to be competitive for these kinds of dollars. These two phases obviously complement each other. We're seeking $30 million in general obligation bonds. I'm pleased to report to you today, and this is really critical because it's a spectacular act of private philanthropy. We've raised $20 million of the required match for this to show the urgency and the priority that we place on this directing the future of scientific research and the advancement of higher education and the lives of our students for the future. So, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I thank you for the opportunity to present this report briefly. I don't want to trespass on my colleagues or the committee's time, but I'd be pleased to stand for questions to the extent that you have them. Thank you.
Thank you, President Fromeyer. And we're capable of polysyllabic words at times, so we appreciate it. Keep us on our toes. So, Senator Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. President, it's always a pleasure to see you. And I absolutely love this. You shared it with me earlier, and I think it's really important for us to understand what the economic value of our learning institutions are to our community. This is incredible. So in that vein, let me ask you this question. Last session, we funded three projects for you. Can you please tell me where you are in those projects? Did they come in under budget, over budget? Did you meet all the expectations with the private funding, the matching funding, and are we good to go? And what's the economic benefit to the community?
Let me start with phase one because it's the furthest along. Construction actually began, and the holes were dug. The financing is available. The building will be completed well into this biennium. The second, of course, the College of Education building, that was, another spectacular act of generosity. We are currently within a couple of $1 million of the total $50 million needed for the project. We will break ground, we believe, sometime in this calendar year on that much-needed facility. And Senator Walker, I'm blanking on the third project, and I apologize.
The theater
project will be a formal dedication of the kickoff of that project within about the next 4 to 6 weeks.
Mr. Chair, what is amazing to me is that at one time the University of Oregon had just cut out its Department of Education, and we were in a very economic depression, and I'm so glad to see that it has resurged in such a fine fashion. Let me ask a second question, if I might.
Sure, Paula.
Mr. President, I'm sure you are doing this because I know you did that with your science building, your phase one. All of your buildings are meeting the LEED standard for sustainability and environmental concerns so that we can lower costs. You know, the engineering building at the Oregon State University is just a marvel in construction and how they actually use rainwater to flush the toilets. So talk to me a little bit about your concerns about your buildings.
Yes, Ms. Chairman, Senator Walker, we try to make sure that each of our buildings meets the highest, most advanced standards, and we hope in each case it sets records for or goes beyond best practices of the time. That will be consistent with not only our campus architecture, but really what we believe ought to be the example that institutions such as ours set for the future. So with respect to the funding that we're seeking here, yes, we would do no less than try to make sure it was at the highest standards and quality with respect to energy conservation and environmental soundness. And while I can't speak to those because they're not built yet, I think the committee may know that the Lillis Complex, which houses our College of Business, has won a number of prizes for the quality of its engineering, its thoughtfulness, the way it's sited, the way it utilizes solar panels for the generation of electricity and so forth, as well as the aesthetics of the building. So I do wish to assure you that these will be tastefully and artfully done as an aesthetic matter and done with the greatest respect for the need to conserve energy and reduce costs in their operation.
Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Walker. Other questions? Great.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you, President Romeyer. Appreciate it. All right, our final speaker by the testimony today, we have the Chancellor, George Bernsteiner, the Chancellor of the Oregon University System. Welcome, Chancellor Bernsteiner.
Thank you, Chair Galizio, members of the committee. Thank you for allowing me to be here today. For the record, my name is George Bernsteiner, and I'm with the Oregon University System. I think that Bob Simonton and the presidents have demonstrated to you the needs which we have for capital construction in this system. I hope that you are convinced also that to make these investments will have payoff for Oregon and Oregonians. A couple of weeks ago, when I was in this room speaking with you, I talked about the fact that the state system now educates about 81,000, more than 81,000 students every year, that we conferred last year more than 19,000 degrees and certificates, and that our researchers, our faculty, who are among the most productive researchers in the country in terms of dollars per faculty member, conducted more than $300 million worth of funded research in the past fiscal year. Nearly all of those students study in the buildings which were talked about by the presidents and by Bob Simonton. Every penny of that research work is conducted in those buildings. The buildings do not exist just to be buildings. The buildings exist for a purpose, and the purpose is the education and the enterprise of research that really characterizes our universities. Bob Simonton gave you a statistic early on that said that of the entire value of all the buildings in the state system, 21% is essentially in the state of deferred maintenance. We'll put that in a little bit of a context for you. If you have an average home worth about $200,000, you would have $42,000 worth of repairs to make in order to keep that house going. That means you'd have to replace the roof, you'd have to replace the plumbing, and you'd probably have to replace the electrical system, and that's probably right around $42,000. If you take all the buildings of the state system and apply that same kind of a percentage, that's what we have right now, today, in deferred maintenance. And what this proposed budget does, really for the first time, is to address that systematically and head on. We are preserving the state's assets, but we're preserving them not just to keep them as buildings, but to keep them in productive use to educate students and to conduct research. President Bernstein showed you the Lincoln Hall example. President Frohnmayer could have talked about Fenton Hall, a 1905 building at the University of Oregon, much of which has not been renovated since 1905 when it was built. Inlow Hall, which Senator Walker referenced as being the location, or I guess Senator Devlin referenced it as being the location of human remains beneath the building, is the third of the buildings in the deferred maintenance category, which is before you. Those three buildings are the Tier 1 of deferred maintenance. Those three buildings are emblematic of the situation with respect to repair and maintenance on our campuses. But also included in there are Nash Hall at Oregon State, the Social Sciences Building and Health Building at Western, and of course PSU's Science Building Number 2, which is one of the buildings that really I think we should focus on. Because were it not for that building, the 26,000 students at Portland State University would be unable to study science at a time when Portland State is not only the largest of the educational institutions in Oregon, but also is beginning to grow in its research in the science areas. This building is inadequate today. This building was inadequate when it was built. This building is what this investment is about. We need these facilities to educate our students and to do the research. OUS has been a model of self-help in this regard, and you saw and you heard various information from Bob or from President Frohnmayer about the leverage of private dollars. We have raised $4.13 for every dollar the state has invested in the last 12 years in order to build and maintain, but mostly build, the buildings which are housing the programs that our students and researchers occupy. But the fact that we have 21% in deferred maintenance shows that we cannot do this alone, that we need a partnership, and that it is very difficult for us to raise significant funds to repair buildings, from private sources to repair buildings. It's very difficult to put a naming plaque on the pipe, which President Bernstein showed you, as being something that donors would particularly be proud about to have invested in. That partnership is an easier partnership for new construction, and new construction is important. And you heard President Frohnmayer speak about the Integrative Science Building. But President Ray could have come and spoken with you about the Linus Pauling Institute, which will house chemistry programs for Oregon State University, and which, like the U of O project, will be bringing $30 million of donor funds into the equation. We could speak about the Theater Arts Building at Southern Oregon University, also has a major gift component. And gift components also are parts of the library program at Eastern Oregon University and the Hermiston Center that is affiliated with Eastern Oregon University. We will continue to find ways to leverage dollars from the private sector, from the federal government, from donors. But for repair and maintenance, there is really no effective substitute for the investment of the state. These investments will provide state-of-the-art learning environments and research labs.
They will keep historic and valuable state assets functioning. They will save energy and will reduce operating costs. They will generate more than 5,000 family wage jobs during the construction periods. But mostly, they will help us educate the students and conduct the research that will fuel Oregon in a competitive 21st century economy. If you have any questions, I would be happy to answer. Thank you.
Thank you, Chancellor Prinsteiner. Questions? Senator Deckard.
Thank you. I thought other folks had had questions. So, Chancellor, looking at the list, and it's an impressive list, and it's an aggressive list, and the private philanthropy is equally impressive. You're aware of kind of the historical concern that everyone made the list. And we have a phenomenal board of higher education. But if you could, and I don't know if it is available and at your fingertips, what projects were not included and what didn't make the cut, and how did the board arrive at this list, and who was said no to?
Mr. Chair, Senator Decker, I do not have the list in front of me, but I can tell you the process. And maybe Bob has the list, and he'll feed them to me. He looks smarter than I really am. But the process involved discussions. You saw the criteria noted in Bob's presentation. The board went through every one of those projects. And the projects included not just the ones which you see, but others which were recommended to the governor that the governor did not approve, and others which the board suggested be deferred into subsequent biennia because they weren't viewed as, quote, being ready quite yet or being quite as important in meeting the criteria that the board had established. What were those criteria? A lot of them related to need. The need could be demonstrated. Let's break them into first the repair and then the new construction, because I think they're very different. In the repair, if you look back to the facilities condition index, which Bob had indicated before, every one of the buildings in the state system was looked at, in every system within every building was looked at by consultants and by staff over a period of some months. Those were then categorized in terms of what is essential to keep the building operating effectively, not just operating, not just keeping the door open, but keeping the lights so they work, keeping the plumbing so it works. All of the things that are necessary to keep that building going. And every building was then scored by that consultant and those staff and brought to the board, and the board then essentially said, we will go down essentially the top six deferred maintenance projects, and there were dozens of deferred maintenance projects.
The full board?
The full board. The top six then are the ones that were moved forward. And so that we could have brought you a list of $640 million worth of deferred maintenance, but we did not. We brought you a list of about $89 million worth of deferred maintenance that represented those six most important projects. With regard to the new construction, the board had several criteria, some of which dealt with need, some of which dealt with congruence with the board's priorities as it tries to set the strategic plan for the system over the next 20 years, some of which dealt, frankly, with whether or not that project could raise funds, and so the matching opportunities were taken into account by the board. And the original list that went forward to the governor was in a priority order. So the board ranked them from 1 through 32, I believe, in order to say these are the things that we think are important for the state system schools to be approved for 07-09, and here's the rank order in which we think they are, you know, that they should be. What you heard today from the presidents and from Bob were about the top four. We could have gone through the remainder of the list that the governor also approved. I mentioned some of those in the Linus Pauling Institute, in the Theater Arts Building, and in the two projects at Eastern, but there are several others as well. But there was a very rigorous process to look at a much larger list of projects, and we can give you the actual rank orders of those, and then the ones that show up in 09-11 and those that show up in 11-13 as well. And he may have found it.
That's the list that was approved.
Okay.
So
we can provide that to you then.
So, Mr. Chair, so that is a list of beyond the 32 that were prioritized, the list that you are...
The ones that go beyond the 32 were rolled into subsequent biennia, is the way that was handled. Thank you.
Thanks, Senator Devlin. Other questions?
Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chancellor, we had extensive discussions before about capital improvements, both deferred maintenance and new projects, and the way they're funded and how that process has changed over time. Last session, I believe, for the first time, we funded enough deferred maintenance so that the list didn't grow longer, I mean, from a dollar standpoint. It is almost extremely difficult to determine what the future needs of the university system are for additional capital projects. But have you given any thought to sort of a long-term vision for how you would approach deferred maintenance over the, say, the next decade, and what you project would be the debt load to do the type of capital projects that may be necessary over the next decade? So I think that's one of the questions that comes back here. We all know that nationally, public funding, not support, public funding for higher education has declined. We all know that if you go to an area of public education, student assistance, we rate an F. But we're not unique in that F. I think about 47 out of 50 states rate an F. But if you had to project, because that's one of the questions we get here, we're going into debt. What should a reasonable level of debt be? How would you set that? And are there states that you would think that have good systems or that are making their systems better that we can compare to?
Well, Chair Senator Devlin, those are many questions, and they are important questions. We do have a six-year look at our capital construction. In fact, the listing of the projects that probably is in your binder shows you that look. It is my belief that the approximately $83 million that is in the governor's recommended budget for capital repair is approximately the amount that is needed every biennium to stay sort of level with where we are right now in terms of not building the deferred maintenance backlog. So that, and that's the amount of money that in many states is rolled into the operating budget as appropriation. I'm just explaining how it often works. The $89 million which we have to deal with actual deferred maintenance projects will make a big dent in a $640 million backlog. It'll take about one-sixth of that backlog away. And that'll be the first time we will have made actual progress against the backlog in anybody's memory. Were we to address it systematically, then, we would address it about that much every biennium for six biennia. And if that were in sort of in constant dollar terms, if that were a $90 million a biennium amount, then that's the amount you might be looking at in terms, in trying to address that. We have historically put about 12 or so million of debt and 12 or so million of cash towards those needs every biennium. And so that some amount of the old debt obviously is retired in every biennium going forward. But my guess is that if we were to look at it with a hard eye, we would probably be looking at an increase in out biennia that's fairly substantial over what we've spent in the past.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I look at your figures, $3.5 billion worth of property, $640 million worth of deferred maintenance. That's about 20% of the give or take a point or so there. Of your value of your property is what we need for deferred maintenance.
This seems to me, from my limited perspective that I have, that this deferred maintenance has been accumulating at maybe something of an accelerated pace in recent years, or certainly in the last decade. And while I applaud and am inclined to be supportive of your goal that you have here, I'm still sitting here scratching my head, wondering what my grandson, when he's sitting in the side of the aisle, some 40, 50 years down the road, is going to have for a deferred maintenance, and how we're ever going to keep pace, or keep up with this. Maybe you've addressed it, and maybe I've just missed it, but I don't hear a real plan to catch this up. And I don't know, Mr. Chair, what is the net value of your property that it's appropriate to have in a state of disrepair? Is there some formula there that we can look at and say X percent of the net value is okay to be have for deferred maintenance? And I don't know where we're at there, and I don't know what our plan is. I know what your plan is for the next biennium, from what you're talking about, but I don't know what it is from there on out.
Mr. Chair, Representative Jensen, thank you again for several questions. I'm going to try to take them one at a time. With regard to the plan, what we are proposing is to not fall behind any further. That's part of what we've got in here, and that would recur in every biennium. We're also proposing that one-sixth of the current backlog be addressed in the upcoming biennium. And I would hope that were you to approve that, we would come back to you in the next biennium and request probably a like amount or something of that ilk. And the reason for that is we want to keep these buildings in productive use. I don't want to be in a situation where we were worried about, as we were worried about 2 years ago, of having to close down a campus because we couldn't heat it. And you recall that discussion about Oregon State and its heating plant at that time. We don't want to get into that situation again with respect to any of the other campuses. So we would be aggressively moving forward to discuss with you the deferred maintenance needs. Those buildings are there for a purpose. They're there for us to use to educate students and conduct research. That's what we need them for. And if they're not in productive use, that means we're not educating students and we're not conducting the research. And so we will bring that forward. With regard to what is considered to be a norm, and my eyes are not very good, I'm going to take off my glasses so I can read what Bob put in front of me here in terms of national standards. Under 5%. Is deemed to be good for a state system in terms of its deferred maintenance backlog. 5 to 10% is deemed to be fair. So were you to take that as a method of looking at it, we would, at a $3.1 billion value, anything less than about $150 million in deferred maintenance would be considered good. We're at 640. Anything up to about $310 million would be fair. Again, we're at 640. So you can see that we are at a very vulnerable position on many of our buildings, and it shows up in those overall percentages. We would like to get into the kind of range that is viewed as appropriate for other universities in that 5 to 10% range, and we'd have to address it aggressively over the next several biennia to be able to get back to that level. I hope that's
That's very good, and I appreciate, Mr. Chair, very much your answer and your comments on this. However, I just note that in this particular arena, then, the university system is not in danger in the immediate future of getting a passing grade on this particular component. It certainly is, you leave something for us to strive for. To get that up there. The problem with the plan that you have, at least as I see it, Mr. Chair, is that and I think it's all very good and very workable, and maybe we can catch up. If you can find some way to prevent us from going into an 01 recession again, in which case we may have a problem with it. I'm sorry.
It's a tough charge. I represented Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering if it would be possible, because these budget requests don't exist without a context to them, and there are already levels of commitment financially that the state has to things that have happened in the past. Is it possible to get some kind of broad-level contextual information about how this particular proposal that's in the governor's budget relates to what the state's already committed to and the impact that has on the discussions that we have?
Thank you, Representative Morgan, and which segues yesterday we had planned to have Steve Bender, legislative fiscal analyst, was going to give a 15-minute overview. I don't know that we have time for that, but I think, Steve, maybe you can give some information. But before you get into that, I missed that Senator Morse, I believe, had a question.
We're good with Steve.
If you wish. Okay. So maybe, we don't have adequate time, obviously, but I think if you can perhaps provide some information that I think would be useful.
Mr. Chair, members, basically the impact that this capital construction proposal would have on your budget in terms of balancing the budget is primarily a situation that will occur in future biennia, because for most of these projects, when the bonds are issued, the debt service doesn't begin until the next biennia. But to give you, put this in some context, last session the legislature had to find approximately $39 million to fund debt service for capital construction projects in community colleges and OUS. This time around, the governor's budget would ask you to find approximately close to $70 million, so not doubling, but quite a large increase. Most of that is inevitable, we're already done, in the sense that these are for projects that were approved in 05 and the debt service is now coming due. Some of this, though, is related to new projects that are coming forward. So the full $70 million or so is not absolute at this point. If you approve all of the capital projects in the governor's budget for both higher ed and community colleges, next, in the 09-11 biennium, when those costs fully phase in, there would be an additional $70 million of debt service per biennium related to these projects. So the amount of debt service for these new projects would be far higher than what is currently being paid for all past projects. Essentially, debt service in 09-11 would be about $130 million as opposed to roughly $39 million in the biennium that will be ending in a few months. So it is a very large increase and more than tripling the debt service costs by 09-11.
Just for clarification, Mr. Bender, are you speaking of the funds that are directly relatable to what we call fungible funds? These are not the X bonds where the revenue is generated from the operation of the facility. These are general revenue bonds, lottery bonds, certificates of participation, things like that.
These are the debt service that would have to be paid from the state general fund or lottery fund.
Thank you.
Senator Morse.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We're not in a position to make
judgments because we don't have the information. But Representative Jensen raises an issue that causes me to reflect on the broad policy of distribution between maintenance investments and capital investments. And of the $594 million in total, AUS is asking for approximately $350 million in state support for new projects, but yet your request is $89 million for deferred maintenance, and we continue to go backward. And I'm having a hard time balancing that a little bit.
Mr. Chair, Senator Morris, it's 89 for the deferred maintenance plus 83 for the capital repair, that which is also included in the number, which makes that about $172 million, I believe, for what I would call the sort of repair and restoration and renovation of the existing buildings. And much of the new construction is actually funded by the gifts as well. So, here's the date.
Mr. Chair, Senator Morris, I want to differentiate. There's two parts to the capital picture. First, we have current needs, which, based on the studies that we've conducted throughout the years, estimate that we need to spend about $40 million per year for the current needs that come up. In order to keep this large backlog from growing any larger. So if we spend less than $40 million per year on the current needs, whatever we don't spend gets tacked onto this backlog of the $640
million. Other questions or comments? Well, Chancellor Prince-Steiner, I don't want you to think that we're ending on a...
Yeah.
So, well, it's a sobering note, but, first I just wanted to say to all of you that took the time out to come here today, on behalf of the committee, thank you very much. Really do appreciate it. And, factoring into our deliberations... sometimes there are elements that are more difficult to measure, opportunity costs, for example. So we certainly have to look at debt service, and we have to look at deferred maintenance and struggle with these questions. We also have to think about going forward, what kind of system of higher education we want to have in this state. So this has been very helpful today. And again, I just wanted to say thank you, and I don't know if Chancellor Prince-Steiner, if you have any final remarks that you'd care to make.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. I think the point of emphasis I would like to make is that these facilities, be they new facilities or renovations of current facilities, are intended to allow us to educate students and conduct research. And without them, without having adequate facilities, we will suboptimize what we're able to do. We won't have the kind of impact on Oregon's future, Oregon's economy, and Oregonians' education levels that will allow us to be successful in the 21st century. That's really what this is all about. To Senator Morse's point, and I'm sorry he's not here and I didn't have the numbers in front of me at the time, we are, in fact, proposing about $175 million worth of repair-related work. He's correct. The new construction does total more than that, but the state's portion of that new construction is about $106 million. So it's the other funds, really, that allow us to move the new construction forward in ways just as we have done in the past. But it's a partnership. It's a partnership we have with donors. It's a partnership we have with students. It's a partnership we have with business. It's a partnership we have with the federal government. But we need the state to be a partner for us to be successful, and that's really what we're asking in this capital budget. Thank you.
Thank you again, Mr. Chancellor, on behalf of the committee. And that will conclude our informational meeting for this afternoon on capital construction, and this committee is adjourned.